With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to Hardcore Listening with Chris and Stu. Stu here, flying solo for this intro. Today's guest, it is Mr. John Malta. Now, John is an old friend of mine. He's a fellow Essex gentleman. Now, John came into the public eye 9 years ago now when he decided he would set up a campaign to try and topple the X Factor nonsense and take Rage Against the Machine to number one, which he successfully done. And throughout this podcast, we will find out just how he done that and other incredible marketing campaigns. Let's call them guerrilla marketing campaigns that he's been involved with. And his top five list is fantastic as well. So we met at the Pink Toothbrush to record that, a stomping ground of John's, and Chris headed over and we recorded this just before I opened the doors and let 600 screaming indie kids in to jump all over the place. So it was a great evening, and it was really nice to catch up with John, and please do enjoy his top five now. And 76, drop that intro. It's a drunken soiree in the within. Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listening, the podcast.
Now we are recording.
We are recording. We are in my spiritual home. We're in the Pink Toothbrush nightclub on a Friday night. It's the calm before the storm.
The calm before the storm, where the magic happens. And we're in here for 5 minutes. I didn't realise that the carpet's been replaced and it's no longer sticky as shit.
No, we replaced the carpet after God knows how many years, and we've cut it into some small squares, which we will all be auctioning for charity, because everybody wants part of the famous Pink Toothbrush carpet.
That legacy.
Which, when you mention his club, most people go, yeah, the one with the sticky carpet. So, yeah, we have a new carpet. We've tried as best as we can to get it sticky. We've thrown beer on it, and we've tried to encourage people to be sick on it. And there's sweat and teen spirit all over it. So it's work in progress. It'll soon be back to that foul-smelling, sticky, shambolic mass of fibre that our clubbers expect. So it's coming soon.
So anyway, lovely description.
Speaking of a sticky mass of fibre, sweat and beer, it gives us great pleasure to introduce this evening's guest, Mr. John Malta.
Hello, gentlemen.
You right?
Hello, every dude. I'm great, thanks. I'm great, thank you. Thanks for inviting me on here, and thanks for finally. I'm here, actually, isn't it?
It's been discussed a lot. You come and done the live show in Thurrock.
I did indeed. Yeah, very, very great show that was to do as well.
Thanks.
It was a good laugh.
Was that our Christmas special one?
Yeah.
Was you forced to take a Ferrero Rocher Brussels sprout wrapped up?
I did, and I can't remember what I got that night.
You got a Ferrero Rocher.
Did I? Yeah.
Lucky duck.
I got a feeling I did. Yeah.
Struck gold.
That's rolled round quickly because we're in fucking September, lads.
Yeah.
That was 9 months ago. It's bizarre, isn't it?
That is bizarre.
So, yeah, I guess we'll do another a Christmas thing.
Definitely.
I'll subject other poor bastards to wrapped up
well
treats.
Hopefully, John, you're happy being here. I know it's been a big part of your growing up in here, and I'm sure we will touch on that as this podcast
absolutely
rolls out. So, John, what have you chosen for your top five this evening?
Well, do you know what? I really struggled to think of a top five. What I also did was had a listen to some of your other excellent guests.
Two kinds.
You know.
That's not paying us a compliment.
I'm paying the guests a compliment, not you chaps.
Sorry.
But I really struggled because there was some really, really great top fives, and I was thinking, oh Christ, what the hell am I going to do? And I actually put it out on my Facebook and on my Twitter. Right. I said, look, okay, you lot, what do you reckon I should do for top five hardcore listing? Go. And we had all sorts of different... I couldn't begin to tell you some of the suggestions that I had from top five garden chairs because there's a picture of me on Facebook where I'm sitting in front of about three different varieties of garden chairs and I hadn't noticed. So someone thought, well, why don't you just do your five favourites? You
must garden have chair connoisseur.
Different garden chairs in your house. And I had no idea that I had different styles. For how many years?
Has your life flipped upside down as a result?
It's a competitive industry.
Once you realise that, you're like, oh.
You know, so we had all sorts. But then someone said, well, look, you know, you're known for a chart thing. Why don't you do your favourite number ones? I thought, well, yeah, but that's, you know, I think, has well, that so been
just,
done
just,
before?
Just to introduce you correctly as well. Obviously you are John Walter, human being.
Hello. Yes.
But however, which I'm sure we're going to discuss this again as the podcast unfolds, but... you came to the nation's attention as being the guy that started the campaign to get Rage Against the Machine and successfully got Rage Against the Machine to number one on Christmas Day.
Yes, that's right, yes. 2009, so next year it'll be 10 years, believe it or not.
Years,
can you
on.
Believe that?
Herculean task. I can't believe it's been 10 years.
I know. And we're already in the process and we're actually thinking... It's in thoughts, but we're getting a few things down to possibly do a documentary on it.
Fantastic.
And this place might even become part of it because I think we were talking about this a couple of years ago, weren't we, Stu? The first time I heard the song "Killing in the Name," I can't work out whether it was in this very building, the Pink Toothbrush, or Ritzy's in Romford on a Monday night. I remember it was one of them, and I can't work out which one. So to be fair, I think in fairness, I think I've chosen the brush. I think it had to be here. this place has got a bit of a spiritual connection to that campaign itself, you know. Yeah.
So you mentioned that the people that follow you on social media brought it to your attention that obviously you are, you know, known to the nation as being a chart bothering pain in the arse.
Well, that's a really good way of putting it, and I like that. And thank you. That will go on the headstone.
Said with love.
You're allowed, Stu. It's fine. Yeah. Well, look. I suppose that's how I got known, and it opened up doors for me to work with like the Stones. That came knocking on my door, which was, you know, astonishing. I got to work with the Hillsborough charity single, which was another Christmas number one. And, yeah, I mean, it really opened up a lot of opportunities for me. And so I suppose I've got known for that. I've had a lot of people get in touch wanting me to do the same for them.
Of course.
And I've had to, you know, carefully let people down over the years.
Me and Stu have got a single. We've banged together, John. I say
have
banged
you?
Together.
Have
we haven't recorded it yet, but you're on it. We're doing it at the end of this thing.
Right,
so.
Okay. I think I know where this is going.
So let's curveball that straight away from that then. And so your top five that you've decided to settle on.
Yeah, my top five I ended up settling on because I thought I'd be slightly on key with what I do, but slightly off as well. And so I've decided to pick my favourite top five number two hit singles in the UK that never made it to the top.
Genius.
It's a bloody great choice,
so,
John.
Just a bit of a curveball for myself as well.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, having a little research on it really made me think, my God, there were some crackers that never quite
just
made
missed.
It, you know. You know, well, yeah, and I thought that'd be interesting.
When Stu sent me what your top five was, he just sent his top five number twos, and I was like, finally! And then when Stu explained it was singles, I was like, oh yeah, no, no, that's great too. That's great too.
That was after Chris sent me several pictures.
So it is my top 10.
This isn't South Park, mate.
Oh man, that's fantastic. So it's crazy because I look at this, like how many you sort of like were rooting to become number one and didn't quite make it. So I'm really looking forward to your top five, mate.
Okay, great. All right.
Kick things off, mate.
Number five. Have you got me in order?
I've got them in a very vague order, if I'm honest with you. And it's probably going to be the first ones that I think of that happen to be in that five.
Okay, so well, I've got the list here if you need any help.
Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah, I might actually have a quick quick shifty at that just to remind myself which ones I trust. Because I'll tell you why. Since I messaged you to say, hey, I think this is going to be my top five, since then, you know what happens, don't you? Yeah, and I've had so many more that I've sprung up going, oh, my God, that was number two as well. Yeah, you know. But, okay, right. Okay, I'll tell you what I'll start with. I'll start with probably one of my favourites. Well, they're all really good tunes. Mm. But I'm going to start with Pulp, Sorted, Freeze and Whiz. 1996, yeah. I think. Or 95, it might have been, actually. So,
and what kept that off?
Ironically, I think it was Michael Jackson. Earth song, I think.
Oh, I mean, half fitting.
Yeah, because of what happened. I think it was that.
So he's a bit of a sore loser there, basically, Cocker, when the awards.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Pulp played after that incident at the Brits. I think what you're referring to is Jarvis Cocker got up on stage in front of Michael Jackson whilst he was singing Earth Song. And he actually, he didn't drop his trousers, but he kind of gesticulated, didn't he?
Wiggled his fingers.
What a lot of crap.
Didn't expose himself, did he?
No. But
sent up what needed sending up.
Sent up Michael Jackson, and the gig after that, the very first gig they played, Pulp played, was Wembley Arena, and I went to that, and basically, one of the funniest things I've ever seen on stage, Jarvis Cocker, halfway through the gig, I think it was about halfway through, he suddenly starts, he does his a cappella Michael Jackson. Smooth Criminal. He started doing Smooth Criminal. And it was one of the best things I've ever seen. I mean, to see Jarvis Cocker take the piss out of Michael Jackson at Wembley Arena, in a packed Wembley Arena.
Great.
Very good. You've got to give it to the guy.
And Jarvis is an institution, right? He's one, in my mind, probably the last great British pop star. You know, I think he's got everything you want from a credible pop star.
He made it in our top five frontmen, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think he came up quite high on your one, but it's a very valid choice.
I think he's just the ultimate nerd. You know, he's the geek that knew he was clever and knew how to write songs and
courageous and bold.
A working class hero. Mm. I can't say enough good things about Jarvis Cocker and their performance when they stepped in for The Stone Roses at Glastonbury.
Another good number two single, Love Spreads.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. That was another one that was nearly going to go on the list, actually. There you go. Good segue there. Sorry, Carol. Nice.
And also, I mean, it was a controversial record, wasn't it?
Mm.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was a double A-side with, I think it was Misshapes, if I remember rightly. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I know you were, and I was sort of an indie-ish DJ around the mid-90s as well. And we always used to get asked for Misshapes. It was I never got asked for the double A. And but I do remember at the time as well, when it was released, it was a very, very unfortunate release time, because especially here in Essex, because we had the Leah Betts situation.
Oh gosh, it was.
Yeah, and it was released pretty much. I mean, I'm not up to the dates, and I'm not even going to try and guess.
It's got to be around 95, 96. At school, I got loads of shit for it.
So from
Basildon.
I can talk about that a little bit because Leah was a regular at my.
She was.
Friday night club in Basildon.
So was I. It's Bullseye.
It was the Bullseye.
Yeah, I used to go as well.
She was an indie kid, and she went to Raquel's, where I also worked previously, which at the time, I think, sort of house music and dance music was booming.
It was,
you know,
yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, she took ecstasy and you know, had tragic consequences. After her funeral, all of her friends all came to the Bullseye. And they played Wonderwall. She was a big Oasis fan. They played Wonderwall at her funeral. And I kept getting asked to play Wonderwall. We must have played Wonderwall sort of three or four times that night, and all our friends were there and grieving. It was an odd club night.
Yeah.
You know, it was definitely mixed emotions that night. You know, as much as everyone was enjoying, you know, the music and the environment, it was definitely sort of touched with elements of sadness.
Sour
as to
undertone.
What had happened to this, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, obviously being geographically where we're located, I know your podcast goes all over the place, but in Essex, it really hit us hard here at the time, didn't it?
And it formed a big campaign. There was a big billboard campaign nationwide,
right. Yep.
Which had loads of pictures of tablets right the way across it, all shapes and sizes, and written through the middle of the billboard was which one is the killer, and the E in killer was really big. And because I know it was her dad, Paul Betts, I think his name was.
You could be right, I can't remember. I
sort of posted the picture of Leah on Life Support Machine, which was, you know, front page of every newspaper, and it really brought to the public the public's awareness of, you know, the consequences
the
that ecstasy can have.
Recreational drugs.
And yeah, I think it's, you know, to this day that the name Leah Betts, you know, rings bells of everybody, you
definitely
know, as to you know.
I think you're right. I think that you know, even I think I would agree with you. I mean, this was 1995, you know, and what, you know, 20 odd years later, I still think it has had an effect in the whole of this part of where we live, you know. I mean, I lived in Southwood and Ferrers and Mayland at the time, and Leah was from Latchenden. So, I mean, it hit us all really, really hard. And I think, going back to the song, you know, Sorted, Freeze and Whiz was kind of caught up in the wrong side of that, I think, a little bit. Because if you listen to the lyrics, it's not...
Yeah.
And it's not pro-drugs in any way, shape or form.
And that's credit to Jarvis's, you know, approach to songwriting and social awareness. You know, he's one of us, right?
Yeah.
And can you remember the insert in the CD? It was that the insert in the CD was an instruction manual how to make a rap.
Yes, that's right.
Was it?
Was
it the front? Didn't it make part of the front cover? Because the front cover was because it was a double A side, if I remember right.
Yeah, it was the double A, definitely.
And it wasn't your thin. So I'm going a little technical here. It wasn't the thin type of CD single. It was like the
it was
album style.
It was.
If
it
that
was.
Makes sense,
yeah.
Listeners. And the front was actually the misshapes, which was cut out. I think some cut out and keep. Bodies or something—I can't remember what it was—but the Ease and Whiz one was actually on the back side of it, and it was never put as a flipped front.
Yeah.
At the time, if I remember rightly, because it was also an image of a folded up paper, obviously, which is going to have, you know, something in it, kind of thing. But I remember that really quite vividly, you know, and I remember buying it at the time.
It's a fantastic record.
Oh, great tune! It's a great tune, you know, and. And yeah, number two didn't quite do it, you know.
That's
a bit of
great
number.
I'm already really looking forward to this, man. Like already, this top five isn't disappointing.
What do you want to throw in next, mate?
What should we do next? Let's do something a bit sort of lighter, a bit, you know. well, this is good, you know. We got this is what music can do, you know. It can be absolutely serious. It can be up in the sky. It's brilliant. I'll tell you what. I'm gonna choose Brown Sugar. By the Rolling Stones, if I may.
Go for it.
And this one, the reason why I've chosen this is actually for the track two. I'm being really, really, you know, deep into this. I love Brown Sugar, great tune. I love the Stones. I won't say any more than that. But the B-side was Bitch, right, a track called Bitch. And I'll tell you what, that is, in my book, that is the best Stones track they ever recorded, if you ask me. Technically, I think in some parts of Europe it was a double A side.
Right.
So that's how I'm getting this into the list.
Sneaking it in, crowbarring Bitch in there. Yeah.
Because it was a double A side in certain territories. And I'm literally just putting it in there for the reason being that I think it's the best B side ever, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I was really lucky to work with the Stones in 2010.
What was that about? How did that come about?
Right, well, okay, so. So obviously, Rage Against the Machine hit number one. I had a period of my life for a few months where it just felt that everyone was after me in a good way.
Yeah, totally.
And then I got a phone call. No, I didn't get a phone call. I think I got a
What you did was literally what any PR company would... It was, yeah.
I'll tell you, well...
Fucking impressive.
I could give you some stories of PR companies after that, getting in touch and some of the things they were saying. And
yeah.
That we could have a whole show on that, to be honest with you. But,
and credit to you for not selling your ass and just chasing the dollar. Do you know what I mean?
Because you would, Stu.
Yeah, well, Simon Cowell offered me a job. And the ex-wife, well, I was married to her at the time, but we're still good mates. But
because you done that together, right?
Tracy helped out, and we were offered jobs by Simon Cowell to go work there. The money would have been incredibly good, incredibly good. But you know, it's not really punk, is it?
No, it's not.
You know what I mean, I just thought, you know, I'd proper old school punks from 77, 78, etc. Writing me some fantastic letters and emails and stuff. And I had a guy, I can't remember his name, him and his wife met at a, was it an Undertones gig or something like that, wherever, somewhere. And they got in touch and said, look, we were old school punks from way back. And, you know, some of us have never got over the fact that the establishment fucked over the Sex Pistols, basically, and that should have been that was our number one. Yeah. It was never a number one.
Yeah,
we'll talk about one later. but you know, and what you've done is you've kind of helped correct that a little bit for our generation, because a lot I know for a fact, and these were like in their 40s or 50s at the time. I'm sorry, I'm terrible with maths, as you can work out. And basically, they were saying that, you know, a lot of our friends, our old school mates that we used to go out in the late 70s and what have you, who were, you know, in the minority, really, we've all been talking about it. This whole thing has just caught us around the neck a little bit, and we love it. And what you've managed to do is just put a middle finger up, which we've always nearly managed to do and not quite. And that really, for me, was what... That was it. I was done. That was like, fine. I'm done now. That's cool. If that's what it's done for you, well, you know, thanks for telling. Absolutely. I had lots of really lovely messages about how it affected people. We've had marriages. We've had kids born because they met during
bloody
the campaign.
Hell, that's crazy.
On the group. Yeah. We've just
crazy.
Mental. Yeah. No. I mean, and I still sort of get the odd messages going. Oh, this is Charlie. He's 3 years old now, and we met when we were commenting on the Rage group, you know, and so it's been amazing.
And
yeah,
also, yeah, you know, we're so aware of the power of social media now, but we wasn't then, was we? You know, we knew it was a, you know, it was there and we was all enjoying it, but I don't think we was switched on enough to realise that if you can prick people's attention with something that they feel strongly about, you can get the masses and, you know, and they can vote and they can make a change. You know, we've seen it with, you know, look how active Corbyn was, you know, in the recent election on social media. We realise it's a vital part of our daily lives. Do you know what I mean?
It's a great example of how, the establishment, in inverted commas, got that wrong as well, didn't they? And
massively.
So, I mean, at the time, I was a guy that was experimenting with Facebook, mainly Facebook, Twitter, and all that. And I kind of realised in 2008, about 10 years ago, that I'm thinking, hang on a minute, this could be really, really useful. Especially the groups facility, which at the time, the Facebook groups of 2008 and 9 and 10 were fan-fucking-tastic. They were way better than
they are
now.
Because they had none of those weird metrics now where if you've got a fan following of however many thousand, when you put a post out, it used to go to everyone. Like now, they sort of like
go to every member of the group.
Yeah. Now it's like it doesn't go to everyone, does it? And like to reach your own fan base, you have to pay.
And as a club promoter, that was the best thing ever.
And you couldn't steal other people's fan bases anymore, but you could back then because Facebook groups, you could become an admin of any groups where the admin had been banned for a week or two, and you just a couple of clever little Google prompts that I found. I got in there and became their new admin, and so. I had about 600 groups that I could message instantly to every single member to say, and the way I angled it differently to different people. So for people that hated rock music, I actually said, look, it doesn't matter what it is. if you're fed up of the X Factor, this is our way that we can do it, all right? And so get on board. If we had people that were, I don't know, I mean, just different sort of audiences of people, and I tried to mould it a little bit so that it got them involved. And I always tried to make it an us versus them. So it's Facebook versus that lot with all the money, you know.
And from, you know, initially posting, how quickly did it gather speed?
Well, very quickly. I mean, we used a few tricks to get it going, because at first, when I had the idea and I thought, oh, that'd be fucking brilliant. How cool, have Rage Against the Machine at Christmas number one. It would never happen, but, you know.
Can you remember when you had the idea?
Yes, I think so. And a lot of people have asked me this, and it's a little bit fuzzy how when it originally arrived. I think I was sitting in my kitchen, and it just... I might have even been on Facebook doing something else when I think I might have... I don't know. Because just so you're aware, and the listeners are aware, the year before, in 2008, I did something similar with Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up. Because, and I only did that because I thought it'd be funny. That's all it was, because I thought, hang on, well, downloads count in the charts now, so if we can all download one track, in theory, it will count as a single, and in theory, we can chart something. And that was all it was. It was just a laugh, just to see if one Facebook group could do it. And we got to, well, that's anyway, that's another story in itself, because there's a lot of story. I've heard all sorts of things where Sony rigged it a little bit.
Right.
I've got evidence which it's been taken off Wikipedia numerous times, and I keep putting it back on again, and a few of my friends put it back on again, because we know that the 2008 Christmas chart was definitely rigged, not for the number
who
one.
Took it? Who took number one?
It was Alexandra Burke's Hallelujah, but Rick Astley,
your favourite version of that shoe. We were talking about that the other day, weren't we?
God's sake.
Let's not cloud this good recording we've got here. But no, I mean, we had... We had enough sales, allegedly, to have, I think, number three or number four for that year's Christmas count, which would have been bloody brilliant, because it was just a laugh. That was all it was.
Yeah. And who'd have thought then that Rick Astley would be on stage with the Foo Fighters performing?
There you go. It all happens, doesn't it? Spirit. Yeah. It all happens, you know? But that's it. So it was, and it was dropped on purpose to 73. And one of the guys of Sony actually came out and said this on the James Masterson's chart blog. And fun enough, it all disappeared off the internet very quickly.
Weird that.
Yeah, strange, isn't it? But anyway, conspiracy theories and all that malarkey. But yeah, so it was just a mad time, really. And social media, I was playing around with it. Plus the charts allowed downloads. So I put the two together. And really, like I said, when we had I had other people's groups, I found a Rage Against the Machine fan group, which had about 4,000 in it. No admin, so I became the admin, and I changed the title to For Christmas Number One at the end. And a little trick that I did is I actually sent it. We are in Essex. All right, I stole it. I found an Excel file full of media contacts and journalists.
Yeah.
Okay. And I emailed loads of them. So say, I've got a great campaign, this is going to be big this year, you want to be on this? And naturally, loads of them came back, or a few that bothered got back going, yeah, thanks, mate, yeah, see you later. Yeah,
jog on.
Yeah, jog on, off you go. But then what I did is, about an hour or so later, I'd sent them all out another email, but I used the other group, this group where suddenly it had 4,000 or 5,000 members in it, and I sent them that one instead and said, well, we've made 5,000 new members in about an hour and a half, so you snooze, you lose. And I thought, as long as one of them comes back to me, we could be on something.
Yeah.
And Sky News got back and said, bit short notice, it's 3:30, but can you get on to, can you come into London and come on to Sky News? I said, I work in London, I'll be there at 5, no problem. So I got there and I did a Sky News interview. And luckily that day I was wearing this is going to be really like geeky now, but a TV show called Look Around You. Which was a fake science TV show.
That's right.
Susie Gage talked
Susie
about.
Susie Gage picked that. That was her number one in her top five BBC comedies.
It's one of the best TV shows ever. I don't blame Susie for putting that. And if you asked me the same question, I would probably put it top one or two. It's genius.
Yeah, very funny.
You have to watch it, listeners. Look Around You. Anyway, I was wearing a Look Around You t-shirt. And thankfully, loads of people spotted this T-shirt, and I was getting loads going, oh my God, there's a guy wearing a Tony Rudd Look Around You T-shirt. Where's that come from? Who the hell is he? And so I just tried to do little things like that. I then put the video of that on YouTube, and I sent it off to the BBC and said, you've snoozed, guys. Sky have got there first. You know, I'm around tomorrow if it helps. And luckily, they got back to me and said, can you come into the BBC
John,
and we'll do one tomorrow?
Clever,
and so
clever
we just,
man.
Just playing them off against each other. And that's actually how it was. The first 4,000 or 5,000 people on the Rage Against the Machine campaign were fake.
Yeah.
I weren't even one of the first 5,000 because I nicked it. All right. So when you get people, and I get it loads, right? I go, yeah, I was one of the first couple of hundred on your group. Yeah. And I thought, no, you weren't. I wasn't one of the first couple of hundred, so you definitely weren't. You know, so there's a lot of little mini stories to it that, you know.
Just incredible. When you think marketing companies would sit there, you know, with whiteboards and come up with all these different campaign concepts and that, and...
It's just for thinking outside. Not even thinking outside the box. Fucking smash the box up and burn it. Yeah. Don't have a box. Another little trick we did, which is on YouTube if you want to go and find it. I went back onto Sky News with about 4 days to go, and by this time the group had gone fucking mental, and we had like 500,000 in it, or 800,000, whatever it was, because it hit 1.6 million by the end. But and. There was a guy in the green room that was also doing a chart campaign, and they'd got us both in, and we didn't realise. And we're like, oh, we're both on at the same time. Oh, right. Cool. What single view are you pushing? And he was pushing, I think it was like the Muppets. It was like a Muppets campaign, right? Didn't do very well, but he was on there. And so we sort of like thought, is there anything we can do to, because otherwise we'll just look like two geeky little twats just sitting there with Facebook groups, or should we try and, you know... And one of the things that I was told I was going to get asked about was celebrity backing, because we'd had like the Prodigy, Muse, Stephen Fry, Phil Jupiter. So you know, we had loads of people like tweeting about the Rage campaign, and they clearly wanted me to talk about that. So I said to this other guy, I said, look, I'll tell you what, if they ask us that, go with me on this one. Let's pick the most Z-list ex-children's TV presenters from when we were kids or something like that, and make that a big thing, and like, we're really wowed by it, right? So when we came on, oh yeah, we made it, and again, bringing Look Around You into it, one of the fake characters on Look Around You, we put him in it as a celebrity endorsement. And so all the Look Around You, like, nutcases like me, were going, oh, he's done it again. And we're going, yeah, we had... Bonnie Langford has come out and with her support, which we're really delighted with. Jeffrey from Rainbow, of course, and I think the actor that played Bungle, we think has endorsed it, but we're going to check that one out because we really that'd make it for us. And we were coming out, you know, we were just doing all this sort of stuff. Diane Louise Jordan, you know, it's brilliant. And he goes, but any other names? You've had some. You had Stephen Fry has tweeted about it. And we, yeah, Stephen Fry. But I mean, come on. I mean, you know, Jeffrey from Rainbow, mate. You know, come on. And so we were doing silly little things like that as well. But we knew we had a public watching us, so we thought we might as well just do this. I faked a cutting off on the Radio 5 Live where I had an interview and I cut myself off. Just as I was, it was sounded like I was about to go into, I think he's a fucking cunt. Maybe, you know. And I went, do you know what I think? The question was, what do you think of Simon Cowell? And I said, weird, do you know what I think of Simon Cowell? I'll tell you what I think of Simon Cowell. I think he's a complete absolute. And I cut the phone, right? I went, like that, done. And then what I did is I went on Twitter and Facebook immediately and I apologised. Right? And I said, sorry if that came out, bit of a tirade. You probably all heard it, you know. sorry, I probably went over a bit overboard there and some pretty blue language. But it got picked up by some of the media, you know, as a foul-mouthed tirade, nasty Rage Against the Machine, punk, you know, that sort of thing. That was what I was trying to do. And so it was just creating an us versus them all the way through. That's all I was trying to do, you know. And it still works, folks, if you want to try it, you know.
Well, let's take some notes. Can we just before we go to number three, because you work with the Stones.
Yeah.
And that's
how
you picked number two. What was that like? How was that?
I didn't get to meet any of them, sadly. Which, if I'm honest with you, I didn't expect to.
No,
I thought,
of course not.
It's the fucking Stones. Mm. They're not all going to come and go, hey, John. They're not going to do that.
Plug in something for this twat over here.
Yeah, get him out, you know. So basically, I got a guy called Andrew Dorr, who's the marketing director at Universal Records UK, got in touch. And I don't know exactly the exact how it happened, but from what I can recall, I think he said something like, I see you're into the Rolling Stones because of your Facebook profile. And I replied, well, yeah, I love the Stones, man. Yeah, of course. Oh, right, well, do you want to come into the office? Can you come in next week? Didn't say what it was about or anything. And I'm thinking, yeah, all right, you know. So I went in and he took me and met up with him, lovely bloke. And he goes, right, come this way. And I had to go into this little listening room, and it had like a patio door, sliding patio door, but it was in the middle of an office. And I thought, well, that's unusual. What's that all about? I go in there, and it's all got curtains in it, and this sort of Denon, other brands are available, Denon Hi-Fi in the corner. And he goes, right, sit yourself down. There's a couple of sofas. I went, oh, all right. So I sat down. And basically, he played this Rolling Stones song that I'd never heard in my life. And I thought, Christ, that's good. Wow. And I was just beaming, thinking, the Stones are back, man. Wow, is this new? And he goes, well, not quite. It's actually, it was recorded in 1972 in France when they did Exile on Main Street. But it's been lost for 40 years. And it got this real surreal master tape got found. And it was basically, they found three tracks that they'd forgotten. They were so high or something, they'd forgotten they'd recorded them.
That's crazy.
And Mick and Keith apparently had gone in and tidied it up a little bit. And, you know, it's called Plundered My Soul. And they stuck it on as an extra track on a re-released Exile on Main Street. And I basically said, do you fancy working on re-releasing the album? Do you want to have a go with it? See what you can do with it? And I thought, fucking, you don't say no to the Stones. No. So I said, yeah. And so... And luckily, I did kind of similar sort of thing, and that worked as well. We beat Muse. I think it was Muse, just about to number one, May 2010. Yeah, yeah. And
that's
so it was. Yeah, I mean, you know, the ego did get a bit big at the time. I have to admit.
Sure, it
thinking
did.
Number one again. But yeah, that was the reason why I thought. Well, it wasn't the reason, but to work with them, or to say that I vaguely worked with the Rolling Stones. I was just made up, yeah. I mean, you know.
It's the Rolling Stones.
And Bitch is a fucking great tune.
You heard that, Stu.
You played it.
I'm trying to think if I recognise it.
Absolutely great record.
You've played it down here a couple of times before. I've been in here in the brush when the Bitch has gone on, and I'm straight out in the middle.
I might lure it around here later, Stu. You don't know that.
Yeah.
And I might, so maybe, or even before the club comes, I'll maybe play it. So just remind me of it.
It's got a real groove to it, you know.
Yeah.
It's on the album anyway. It's on Sticky Fingers album. But it's such a great show. And we've got a brown shoe side. I mean, come on.
Yeah, more do you want?
So, and it was just missed being number one. So,
okay.
There you go, Rolling Stones.
What we got for what we got next then, mate?
So for number three, are we going in reverse order here?
We're going in reverse order.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I've chosen...
Still would be three.
Going back to a bit of politics, mate. We're going back to... I've chosen The Wizard of Oz, Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead.
No way!
Released when?
Thatcher, wasn't it?
You see, it was obviously recorded in 1939.
I was going to say, yeah.
And... Now, this was one of those reactionary campaigns that I was sort of involved with. There was about six of us. Basically, what happened is a Facebook group had been made. Get this. This is before the Rage Against the Machine campaign. It had actually been made in about 2007, 2008. The lady in question was called Janie Jones. Genuinely, that was actually her name.
Really?
Yeah.
That's like a superhero. Well,
I think her name was Jane or Jeanette or something, actually. But obviously,
for the purposes of rock and roll, Janie Jones.
She became a Clash fan, so it was Janie. And so she got in touch and said, when Margaret Thatcher died, she got in touch and said, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm getting thousands and thousands of people messaging me, and the group has suddenly just gone from a few hundred hardcore crusties to wallop. There is thousands here all going, right, what do we do now? So I sort of agreed to help out from a distance, if you like. So I wasn't really admin or anything like that. But I said, yeah, okay, I'll give a few tips. For a start, you need to do that, and that. Little things. And they were asked for, suddenly she was getting asked. We kept our identities actually away from the media. Mm-hmm. Nobody really knew I was part of it until about 2 years ago, actually. But we kept all our IDs away from everybody. And we all created another Facebook account to be the admins. So when they were going, the admins are Janie Jones, Noddy Holder, Frank Zappa. Really? And the reason why I've chose this really, because not necessarily for the reasons why it sold a lot, and I can fully understand, and we could probably talk about that all night if we really had to, but just it was one of those moments where I bit like with the Rick Astley campaign, where I thought, no, something's not right here. Someone somewhere is fiddling something.
Yeah.
That's another campaign where I am convinced something wasn't right, because in those days, iTunes, 2013 is when it happened, and iTunes really was the king and queen of if you did well on iTunes, you're pretty much guaranteed you'd do well in the main chart. And so I also, what they did at the time is they had their back end, I'm going all technical computery here, mm-hmm. but where you could actually
get those
see their data.
Yeah.
You could see the data of what songs were selling mm-hmm. really well.
Right.
You couldn't get it on
iTunes. Could you see the numbers? You couldn't see the numbers.
Not the actual numbers, but you could see the percentages.
Oh, right.
Okay, and basically, Ding Dong the Witch is Dead was number one on iTunes most of the week until an hour and a half before the chart finished, where the track that was at number two, which was last week's number one, which was Need You by, I can't remember who it was now, suddenly...
Duke Dumont.
That's it. That's the one. Duke Dumont. And suddenly I noticed that was starting to sell a lot at 10:30 p.m. at night on a Saturday night. Which
Let's have it right. People that are in
the
Duke Dumont
listening to house music aren't buying it then, are they?
Certainly not at 10:30 on a Saturday night.
And it was really selling. And it was going to the point where within an hour and a half it had leapfrogged Ding Dong the Witch is Dead on iTunes. Now, this is just iTunes, but, you know, that really was the main one. And then on the Sunday when the chart was announced, it was number two. And I'm thinking, hang on a minute. Mm. No, I'm not so sure about this. And so, be that as it may, and it did stink a little bit. But we thought, all right, fine, okay. It's still number two.
Yeah,
like,
exactly,
you know,
yeah.
you lot have got to do something about that.
Yeah.
And what I loved about it was it was only like a 58-second song. Yet the BBC, when they played it on the chart show, they made an edited version of about 15 seconds.
Brilliant.
Genuinely. And the fact that it made the BBC edit a kid's song...
that was already
that was
under
already
a
really
fucking
short,
minute.
For me, is up there as a great number two record. Because
absolutely,
I think the fact it made... And it really got a lot of people hot under the cot. Collar.
The music industry don't like you, John, do they, really? Let's be honest. Well, no. What I mean by that is the corporate music industry fucking hate you.
I've had a few run-ins. I'll be honest, I've had a few run-ins over the years. I get on with many people in the industry really, really well, actually. But there is a hardcore few that are not fans of me, let's say. You know?
I'm sure the hardcore Tory ones certainly won't.
Actually, I'll tell you what. Very quick story regarding that. At the time, because this Ding Dong the Witch is Dead was gaining so much traction, there was another counter campaign that had been started to get I Love Maggie Thatcher. There was a song called I Love Maggie Thatcher by... Oh, God.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Which band it was that was actually done ironically. It was an ironic song, but obviously they hadn't worked that one out. And they were trying to get I Love Maggie Thatcher to number one. And because they didn't realise that I was secretly helping out the Ding Dong the Witch is Dead campaign, one of them got in touch with me.
Brilliant.
And said, yeah, I don't know if you've seen, but yeah, we're trying to get those crusty punk people, they'll toss us, a lot of them. We're trying to outdo them. We think we can outsmart them. And we need your help. And I said, yeah, I've got a few. I can give you a few tips. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but can you not say it's from me? Yeah, because I don't really want to, you know, make it obvious that I'm helping you out. Let's keep this all incognito. Let's keep it all hush hush. And you stick with me, kid, and we'll get this one. We'll get this to number one, all right? And so, and I must have trolled this group. Bless them. They got about a good 5,000-6,000 people in it, and. And I was sort of given the most ridiculously stupid tips. how many admins you got? Six, no, it's too many. No, go down to one. Just go down to one. add me as an admin as well, because obviously I can help that out as well. And I kept, and I was trolling little bits here and there as well, because I, if any of you are familiar with Photoshop, I'm not so bad at Photoshop. And I took their photo of Margaret Thatcher, and I just adapted it very, very slightly every so often. So, for example, I put a tattoo on her neck, really vague, where if you turn the sort of the contrast up on your screen, or your brightness on your iPhone up really high, you could see it. And
what was the tattoo?
It was a red flag.
Brilliant.
There was one I did at I Love Neil Kinnock, was another one that we did. just little silly little things like that, you know. And then obviously it really bombed badly. I think it maybe might have scraped the top 40, I can't remember now. And I sort of went hands up, going, oh, I'm really sorry, guys. We tried our best, you know, but it's that lot. They just knew what they were doing a bit better than we did. But, you know, number two, they've done all right, haven't they? But
Fantastic.
That was like,
there we go.
Cat's out of the bag now.
So, for your next one, obviously it's not quite made the top spot. It's at number two, which is fitting for your choice of list.
Yep.
What have you gone for number two?
Well, it kind of follows on a little bit from what we were just talking about, actually. And it's another situation where... to all intents and purposes, it was number one. It was number one that week, and it was stopped. The charts for one week only were counted differently, again, in inverted commas. And it reached number two, and it's the Sex Pistols' God Save the Queen.
Yeah.
And that, 1977, during the Queen's Jubilee. And it was, I think, a piece of marketing genius by Mr. McLaren and co. To bring that out the week they did. and to call it that, because the track originally, the demo version, is called No Future, and that was the title of the song. And it changed it to God Save the Queen, bring it out the same week as the Queen's Jubilee. Absolute fucking genius to do that. Brilliant. Just brilliant. And for that week only, the charts were, they decided to count the charts differently, apparently.
And did it switch back after that as well?
Yeah, they went back to the normal way of counting the week after. Yeah, yeah. There's a really good interview with Richard Branson about it, because the track was on Virgin, a very early Virgin Records at the time, because they were the only ones that would actually release it. And essentially, you know, Richard Branson was just saying, no, they rigged the charts. The charts were rigged that particular week, and Rod Stewart was kept on the top spot. First Cut is the deepest, I think it might have been all. Anyway, whatever, it was Rod Stewart. And it was kept off number one. And, you know, pretty much, you ask anyone in the industry, I know a few people that work at the charts, that used to work at the charts, and they're all of them will say, oh, yeah, that was number one. Easy. It was number one single.
And, you know, taking nothing away from, you know, future guerrilla campaigns and things like that. That was one of the first, right? And you know, and you think of the state that Britain was in, and you know, the average attitude of the man on the street in 77.
Yeah.
To then have something so aggressive, gnarly, you know, politically aggressive. It's fucking unbelievable.
It's incendiary. Really, you know? I mean, it was just like, you know, it was a scatter bomb that had just suddenly hit.
Yeah.
You know, and just the ballsy attitude to just the nerve, in fact, just to do that.
Yeah.
That's incredible. I mean, I take my hat off. I mean, McLaren was, which, you know, I was fucking brilliant to do that, and I was lucky to meet his son. I worked for his son a little bit. Joe Corr, yeah, son of Vivian Westwood and Malcolm McLaren. Really nice guy. I did work with him briefly for the 2015 election. We worked with Bez to try and get him elected.
That's right.
And that was fun. And we also tried to stop Nigel Farage getting elected in Ramsgate. And I'll tell you what, that was bloody good fun as well. We had a really good laugh with that, and it worked. But yeah, no, but the genius of that campaign in 77.
Yeah.
Nothing touches it. I mean, I'm not, you know.
Yeah. It's so weird when you see that legendary appearance on Bill Grundy.
Yes.
You know,
yeah,
you look at it and you got half the, you know, the Bromley contingent there in the background, like Susie, and you just think, if you saw that now, I'm sure there'd still be people going, oh, fucking state of them. But in 1977, that must have been like nothing before it. And it must have just been, you know, so reactionary to witness something like that. Yeah. And unbelievable.
Some people would have been terrified.
Yeah.
But, I think it was actually, I'm being picky here, I think it was actually end of 76 that performance, actually, the Bill Grundy. Yeah, I think that was because Queen was supposed to go on. Apparently, Queen were booked to do the Bill Grundy show, and they pulled out for whatever reason. They pulled out, and they had to get someone in quite quick to do it. And then, so you get the Sex Pistols instead. Incredible, you know.
Before we get to the top spot, let's hang on this for a minute, because you look at the music industry now, and you look at Adele and Ed Sheeran, and I'm not suggesting, you know, they're not decent recording artists, but they're not going to ever shake shit up, are they?
No. Well, I doubt that.
For me, as a young person, you know, if I would have been young enough to have caught the Sex Pistols, you know, and I'm sure, you know, that generations after that, you know, got it with Nirvana, got it with the New Romantic scene, you know, got it with Acid House and so many movements since then. But for so long now, you know, I like the Foo Fighters as much as the next man, and they're becoming almost like an acceptable face of rock. Do you know what I mean? Your mum's not going to be offended by the Foo Fighters. That reaction that the Pistols had, I don't know if you're ever going to get that again. I don't know if you're going to get that. I don't know. Is the industry in such a situation?
Is it just because, as well, though, there's so many different interests in music, everything is broken down so much into such smaller categories that nothing can ever get. It's harder for things to get as much national momentum.
I guess so.
Because there's so much out there.
And there's
that,
not.
You know, there are pockets, but they're never really. It won't get that. And also, they're not setting the world on foot. They're not doing anything new, per se.
But perhaps they've not got a captive audience like, you know, sitting down at 8 o'clock to watch the Bill Grundy show, which was, you know, an institution.
It's the same.
And there isn't that captive audience where you can go on, like, you know, well, I remember watching John's Not Mad when I was a kid. Everyone went into school the next day going... Yeah. Did you watch Panorama or Horizon or whatever it was? Well, I can't even remember what the name of the show was. But, you know, everybody remembers that show because it was like something you'd never seen before.
From four channels, and
that's the thing, it's
a very, the playing field has just got a lot bigger, you know, whereas in those days it wasn't. And if you managed to get on that playing field, whatever way you could, out of the three channels that was at the time, or four, after 82, you're all right, which is why, you know, slightly going aside here, but I mean, that's why I had a massive argument stroke debate about a lot of youngsters. My son's 19, and I was talking to, I think, him and a few friends, basically just saying, well, why the hell have we still got all your lot headlining all of our festivals? And I thought, well, you're right, I'm not going to argue with you. No, Metallica are great, but I'm bored of them headlining now, I'll be honest with you, you know. Because at the end of the day, these bands started back then, when you had a more captive audience, it's easier for them to keep that fan base. It's harder to get a fan base these days. Yes, it's more of an even playing field, which is great, but the downside of that is that it's a lot harder to... get your captive audience because there's so many others out there.
When you see these, you know, TV document, you know, these TV shows, and you know, and you've been a talking head on some of them where it is like, you know, top 50 most outrageous moments in music.
I've done quite a lot of them, actually.
Yeah, you know, I mean, but things like that. But when you look at the content of it, most of it's 15 years old. You know, they're constantly rerunning episodes of The Word. You know, or they're showing seminal performances on Top of the Pops where Kurt, you know, sticks the mic in his gob and don't really sing. And you think that mattered because, you know, or Sean Ryder swearing on TFI Friday because everyone watched it. And I guess now, you know, maybe we're just too old to realise what they are doing now, because last Saturday, as Chris and I are both big boxing fans and MMA fans, and I was sitting in here last Friday and I was just clicking on YouTube to watch the weigh-ins for Saturday night's UFC. And the homepage of YouTube was all about this fight. And I was like, who's Logan Paul and KFC or whatever?
KSI, KPI, something like that.
And I was thinking, I don't know these fighters. And I pretty much know my fighters. And I was thinking, who are they? And it was like... hundreds of thousands of people viewing it and watching and commenting. I was thinking, who are they? And
I got Logan Paul get his ass kicked. I think that would have been a big
and it
pull.
Was it's a fact that's fascinating though, Stu. But that and it was really only my does highlight saying,
oh, do you not know they're fighting?
It highlights your point though, mate, completely, of the change in what people are looking at and what people are mass and what's got mass reach.
And
now.
I do like the guerrilla element that they set that up. Hopefully I'm correct here. But this is just what my kids have told me and some people that also have kids that were all over it, that they set up a pay-per-view on YouTube via both their YouTube channels at £7 to watch the fight live. And they had something like a million pay-per-views.
It was a ridiculous amount,
And I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
and genius. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that, yeah, I think, you know, probably highlights what we're saying.
Yeah, it does. It all ties into new entertainment. And we've spoke about this on other things, about how YouTube and how people consume stuff now.
And podcasts.
And youth and podcasts. Yeah. Like, people are consuming different ways. Like, podcasts tend to be these longer discussion formats. And YouTube, often most episodes are like, you know, if you look at someone's channel, they're rarely 30 minutes. They're little bursts, 7 minutes a pop. Yeah. And but you just get these insanely huge followings. And it's changing.
And I think that's Asia Pacific to a degree, because when we set this podcast up, we was adamant that we was going to have a strong presence on YouTube, and we realised quite quickly that the YouTube views paled in comparison to our downloads on our podcast.
Yeah, it's a completely
I don't think that many kids probably listen to podcasts, but my kids don't watch TV. They just literally have their laptops watching.
Yeah, why watch TV anymore? I went up to stay with my mum, lives in Cornwall, and I went up there at the bank holiday weekend, actually. And
down there myself, mate.
Oh, are you really? Ah, very nice. Whereabouts
were you? Horsand.
Ah, I was in Boscastle. So, very nice, yeah. But I went along, and for 3 days, I'd sort of set, it was almost like I was back in about 1997. Because I didn't take my laptop, didn't take any, I took my phone, obviously, and the kids, my boys went along, and they took their mobile, I think a Nintendo or something, and that was about it. And I ended up, I was watching TV. And
what, in real time?
I know. And I thought, what am I doing? And I was watching some, I don't know what it was. It was honestly, I don't know. It's been such a long time since I've watched TV that I found myself watching TV. And I think, I have no idea what these, I don't know who he is, what they are. There was that Mrs. Brown's Boys, which I did draw a line at.
Yeah, said, you have to draw the line somewhere.
I'm not having this, all right? I'm not having members of my family watching that shit. Get it off. Pretty much wasn't far off saying that.
Yeah,
but, but to me, it something that I used to do vehemently for years, it was alien to me, and it really struck me. I was thinking, I don't want to do that. I don't want to watch TV.
I don't want to watch it on your schedule. The only time I still get suckered in, because I'm a bit of a movie nerd, but if a movie comes on TV and it's one of my Halo'd movies, it could be fucking Conan, for God's sake. Like, I will have to watch it at that time. Other people are watching this right now.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is about me that gets a little kick about the fact part of the nation are all in it with me watching it.
I've experimented with that very concept.
Really?
Yeah, I have, because I don't know if you know, but Facebook groups, they do a thing called a watch party.
Right.
If you have a look on a Facebook group, there's a watch party. And that's bloody good, because what that is basically you can set a time where you are going to start a video or
that's
set a video.
Brilliant, yeah.
And it means everyone's got to watch it at the same time.
Yeah.
And I experimented. I found the film called The Room, which if you haven't seen that, folks, what are you doing? It's
remade
brilliant.
By James Franco recently, yeah.
Not quite. Well, it was more of a documentary of that, the making of that. And I found it, and it was a really bad rip, to be fair. And I stuck it, and I thought, Facebook are really hot on things like this, but I'll try it. And I managed to get it onto my Facebook page as the full movie. And I thought, right. So I actually set on my local Facebook group, Southwood and Ferrers, I made a watch party to watch The Room. I said, right, from midnight, anyone's with me, we're going to watch The Room. If you haven't seen it, you've got to get on this. And it's like just a normal Facebook post. And we had like, I think it was like 70-odd people locally all watching this film at the
commenting
same time.
Commenting down the side.
And you all comment together.
It's like a lie-in cinema. Like, I've literally captioned that term, so anyone who wants to use that now, I want 5p? basically, back in probably about 2007, there was a thing called Justin TV, and it was online. And like, you know, I'd get into bed and I'd be like, I'm just going to put something on. I don't think Pornhub was about then. And basically, it was like you go on channels and there's hundreds of different channels. And I've been a horror fan my whole life, and it'd just be old reruns of horror movies that I've always loved. But what you find is that each channel is at this many thousand watching it. It's bloody amazing. You sit there and then down the comment side, you just watch people. I'm a bit of a lurker. Like, I don't really do much commenting.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm straight in here, you can agree with that. But it's just fantastic. I'd sit there and I'd just love watching people's comments and being part of that community watching it. So, yeah, there's something to be said for it.
There is definitely something about communal
watching of films or something.
Definitely,
isn't there,
definitely.
I
find
for.
If I sit and try to film my kids, and then one of them gets their phone out, I'm like, "What are you doing? Come on! You know, you want everyone to enjoy it."
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
Well, look, we've hit the hour mark, and so should we pull it back and get
yeah,
your number
let's
one?
Back. Let's get the number
let's
one
do
in.
It.
Let's hear it.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Well, the number, in my opinion, the number one, number two, of all time, in my humble opinion, is Wham! Last Christmas.
Ah.
Did that not go to number one?
No. In 1984, it went to number two, and it was the biggest selling number two single ever.
Right.
By Band Aid.
Oh, of course, course.
And then last Christmas, no pun intended, we did a campaign to try and get it back to get it to number one.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, it got to number two. we failed again. So, but it was good.
The irony.
But I'll tell you what, it was. It was bloody good fun, and to get it to number two twice was just a bit of a weird.
Yeah.
I don't know. It didn't hit the top, but actually, I mean, Ed Sheeran beat us, but we thought, well, you know, it's been a bloody good laugh. And,
yeah.
But to me, that is just such a brilliant song.
It is.
It's probably my favourite Christmas tune. I think that or Stop the Cavalry, Jonah Louis. It's between those two for me. It's just, I think it's just a genius piece of writing.
It's a lovely song. It's a cracking single.
And yeah.
So should we get some honourable mentions in before we finish? Like okay. Any others that you would like to sort of throw in the loop?
I think I mentioned earlier, but the Stone Roses.
Yeah.
One of my all-time favourite tunes. Love it. And that I don't know what beat that to number one. But that was number two.
Yeah.
You know.
I want to throw in the Crackers International EP. By Erasure, which the single was Stop.
International. Yeah.
And I think Stop is a absolutely fantastic record.
Erasure, great
pop, pop geniuses. Yeah. And that was kept off, I believe, the Christmas number one by Kylie and Jason, especially for you.
Strictly speaking, that wasn't actually Christmas number one, Kylie and Jason. It was number one near Christmas. I'm going to get really arsey here, but I know these. No, it was actually. The Christmas that went to number one.
Oh, right,
the Christmas that time was actually, ironically, Band Aid 2.
Ah, right.
yeah.
Oh, that was tragic. I think that was the one featuring like Sonia and Big Fun, Cliff Richard.
I might be saying controversial here, but even that was better than Band Aid 30 and 40, which I thought was just an appalling. Just what the thinking behind that was, I do not know, because like, if you want to
leave it alone.
It,
yeah.
Make Band Aid 30 and 40.
Yeah. Think of something new,
that
folks.
Wasn't 40, sorry. Band Aid 20 and 30, I mean. Yeah.
And
sorry,
so we can't discuss this without mentioning Vienna, obviously. And
Joe Dolce all the way, mate.
Yeah. Absolutely. Joe Dolce, shut up your face.
Best thing you
kept Ultravox's Vienna from the top.
I mean, I'll admit that I fucking hate that shit.
Vienna or?
Vienna. No, I cannot stand Vienna.
Yeah. It's pompous nonsense.
I hate it. I've never liked it.
But as a
Was you secretly happy then? That year?
I used to suppose I was a kid at the time, and I remember singing along to it. Yeah. But I'll tell you something. Very quickly, in 2010, 2011, there was a campaign. Someone had started a campaign to put Vienna at number one, where it should have been, supposedly. And again, I think a couple of guys got in touch with me going, yeah, we're trying to do this. We want you on board. And I said, well, look, I'll be honest with you, chaps. I don't like the song. I don't care. And you know, and I have to say, I would probably campaign to put Joe Dolce up against it for a bit of angle. Just so you'd get a bit of press out of it. I would as well. And as it happens, Joe Dolce happens to be a Facebook friend of mine who talks to me now and again, here and there. And so we'd have a bloody good laugh with this. And we didn't do it eventually, but...
Did they bother? Or did they...
They tried, but it didn't.
Fell flat on
the side. We're very similar of age. And I think... You know, we must have been very young, you know. That was early 80s, wasn't it?
81, I think it might have been. Yeah,
Joe Dolce, shut up your face. It was the greatest thing ever, wasn't it?
At the time, it was... Honestly, when we were kids, shut up your face was the best fucking tune in your early life. It was just brilliant. And looking back on it, I did a... again, it's one of these sort of Channel 5 list show things that I had to do. And I had to comment on that song. And that, funny enough, it was commenting, all the others were doing, oh, yeah, Vienna was much better. And I was the only one that came out going, No, fuck that. Joe Dolce quite rightly went to number one because it was a better song.
Yeah.
It was better than Vienna. And until this, in 2018, I still fully 100% stand by that. Absolutely. Yeah.
He's Midge co-wrote Band-Aid, so I'm sure he's had his fair share of time at number one, right?
Yeah. He also, If I Was a number one.
Was
solo,
that number one?
I believe it was, yeah. So I'm a chart geek. You've
lost me on that.
I'm afraid.
Yeah.
That one, did you definitely called me out.
But
Dancing with Tears in Her Eyes. That must have been chart bothering. That must have been up
that
there.
That wasn't a
harrowing video. That was one of the first videos that really scared me as a kid. That, because it was all about the warning going off and the nuclear bomb was going to happen. And
he's
running through crowds trying to get home.
I think I remember that actually. Yeah, that was another mention actually. Another honourable mention, which not many people like, but I like it, is a track called Be Quick or Be Dead by Iron Maiden. That was number two. And it's not one of their best songs, I know that, but I love it.
What kept that off, can you remember?
No. Because 92, that was.
Because that was a big deal when Bring Your Daughter to Slaughter. Was that Christmas number one?
That was another piece of marketing genius, Bring Your Daughter to the Slaughter. Number one for 2 weeks, Iron Maiden, Bring Your Daughter to Slaughter. Wow. Not their best song in the world, but what they did is they exploited the chart rules. And they, you're allowed, I think, 6 remixes of the same on your singles. So what Iron Maiden did is they brought out different formats, and they were the first to do it, really. Really, they were the first to do it, where they brought a different B-side out on each format.
And Maiden's following his Die Hard, right?
Absolutely, and they also released it. The charts that year, I think the Christmas chart was announced or completed December the 20th. It was 6 days before Christmas itself. So the chart topper was Cliff Richard's Saviour's Day, right? And what Iron Maiden did is they were doing Christmas gigs in the UK at the time. And they were basically just stopping the gig and saying, right, this is what we're going to do, right? We're releasing this one and we want to be top of the Christmas tree instead. But the way we're doing it, it's going to be the week it'll actually hit number one officially the week after Christmas. No one releases singles.
It's the easiest time to chart, isn't it? It's the easiest time to chart.
That's how Offspring did it.
Yeah.
Right. Offspring were number one. Terrorvision almost did it the same week as Offspring, funny enough. They tried it in January and they were number two. Tequila, that's another honourable mention, surely. Tequila by Terrorvision. Love that. Great tune. You know, kept off by Pretty Fly for a White Guy. That was a interesting week, you know. But January was the time, and if you look back historically, a lot of the rock bands and the indie bands had released singles actually start of January because no one else was, you know, that was the time to do it. You'd get a bigger hit if you did it in January than you did it in, say, summer or before Christmas. So that's how they pulled that one off, and that's how you had a track like Bring Your Daughter to the Slaughter.
That's so clever, releasing different B-sides on different formats.
They did like Led Zeppelin covers, and they did all these, like what they did was they did a lot of covers of some very famous tunes. They did Communication Breakdown, Led Zeppelin, they did Doctor UFO. But you had to buy all the versions.
I mean, but post that become a thing. Throughout the 90s, you know, every band released variant CD singles with different B-sides and remixes.
Disc
on,
one
on
of
each one.
Disc set, remember those, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Faith No More got to number two or number three with Be Aggressive.
Be Aggressive,
Be Aggressive should never be in the top 40, but that was like a number two. Oh no, great. Angel Dust, fucking brilliant album.
One of my favourite albums.
I love that album. I could go on about that.
Yeah.
You're right, the early to mid-90s, It was the thing, you know. You wouldn't just release one single. You'd have four or five, I think, maximum you're allowed, and every format.
It was a cracking time to collect CDs.
Absolutely,
without a doubt. Yeah. I loved it. Yeah. I got just so many, and unfortunately, we don't do it now. I don't really collect those bits and pieces.
Well,
you know?
One of the things with the metal bands as well, going back to, you know, GNR and you know, bands like Wasp and bands like Maiden. Picture discs, on vinyl. Oh, yes. They were big purveyors of them, and you know they were always, you know, you could buy the 12, you could buy the 7.
It looked so impressive, didn't it?
You could buy the picture disc, you know, and it was like, and I remember a mutual friend of ours, Camden the Gang. I won't say his real name. he, yeah, because you worked on a campaign with him as well.
I did. Number 63, we got
excellent.
That too. Yeah, yeah.
Excellent. But I remember once we was we found this place in Dagenham where they used to make the picture discs. And and in the bins outside, they used to throw out the ones, because a lot of them, like I think Guns N' Roses, it was either Paradise City or one of them, was the shape of a gun.
Night Train.
Night Train, okay. So yeah. It was that, and it was in the shape of a gun. But sometimes they didn't cut them out, and they just still had like the circular with clear vinyl around it. They're throwing in the bin. Now, an uncut picture disc is so much more collectible and worth so much more money.
Really?
And I think Hunt's got shitloads of them with clear vinyl around the outside.
That's where this factory was. Do you know what? How many years has that been? I've heard about a factory somewhere in deepest Essex, somewhere that was making picture discs.
Yeah.
And if you went out to their skip at the right time, you were lucky and you would find some gems.
Oh, yeah.
I'd know
how exciting.
Yeah.
I heard all about that as a kid.
He was all part of that. All part of our journey when we'd go and do the boot sales and then we'd go and have a little rummage.
Exactly. Like. Ferris, we had a sticker factory. And so all the when you collected stickers for Panini and all that, loads were made in
Southampton.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And you get all the rare ones with a bit of...
Well, I'll tell you what, it was the one town in Essex, or probably in the whole country, where there was no point, no one went to the newsagents to buy stickers, like the Return of the Jedi stickers or Football 86. You just didn't buy them, because you just go to the skip, or someone your mates would go to the skip, fill their bags up, and you just go for the bags and go, oh, yeah, there's Glenn Holder with, he looks a bit green because they've got the colour slightly wrong. Mm. Don't matter.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. And in early to mid-1980s in Southwood and Ferrers, literally, you every single BMX, every chopper, every bike, were covered in stickers because literally you could go and nick reels and reels of this stuff. Tiptree Jams got theirs made there. The Bond film sticker album. You could get James Bond stickers, Weetabix stickers they gave away.
Brilliant.
Those ones where you had to like buy packets of
cornflakes.
Didn't matter. You didn't in South Woodham. You didn't need to. You just went right. I'll have that one, and I'll have that one. And
brilliant.
Scott,
brilliant.
Before they saw it, you know.
Superb.
God, that's where it was then. Dagenham, right.
John, it's been amazing.
As always, chaps.
Thanks, man.
Thank you so much. We're so lucky
with the guests that we have on and our interest in the chat. So, and this one's been superb, John. So thanks so much, mate.
Thanks for having me. It's been a while, isn't it? But we finally got it sorted.
Got it done.
And it's been a pleasure
space for it as well. So thank you.
In the pink toothbrush. No, I quite agree. Yeah.
Lovely. John. Absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Cheers, buddy. Well, there you have it. That's the end of our Collison episode with Mr. John Malta. We knew you'd love him because he's a proper good lad. And that's some interesting stuff he's done, right? Absolutely fascinating that sitting in your front room can come up with just mad little ideas that literally rewrite pop culture. And you know, what we didn't even touch on, aside from Rage getting to number one, was the fact that, you know, there was then a free gig that Rage played at Finsbury Park to, I dread to think how many thousands of people, where John was welcomed on stage for that. Absolutely fantastic. So, yeah, big love to John for coming down, and thanks to the Pink Toothbrush for letting us record there, and we will see you next week. It's a drunken soiree in the Within. Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.